Thank you. So good morning, everyone. I'd like to begin the Upper District meeting at this August 12th, 9 a.m. And we'll go to item number one, which is Pledge of Allegiance. And if we can start that up, Ruben, we'll be happy to do that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent. Thank you. Now we'll go to item number two, and is the agenda there? Okay, thank you. Item number two is the roll call of the board of directors. Please say if you are present. Director Santana?
Here.
Director Trevino?
Here.
Director Fellow?
Here.
And Director Contreras?
Here.
And I am here too, President Ed Chavez. Let the record show that all members and directors are present. We'll go to item number three, adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
A move from Trevino.
Second, Farrell.
It's been moved by Trevino, seconded by Director Fellow to approve the agenda as presented. Is there any questions, comments? If not, let's take a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Yes.
Director Trevino?
Yes.
Director Fellow?
Yes.
Director Contreras?
Here, yes.
And Director Chavez, yes. So that item passes 5-0. We'll go to item number four, public comments. Anyone wishing to speak before the board of directors may do so at this time. Do we have anybody present to do so?
Good morning, President Chavez. We have received no public comments, and I don't see any hands raised. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just give about 30 seconds, and if anybody has their hands raised, we'll take them. If not, we'll just go ahead and proceed with the agenda. We'll go to item number five, committee reports. We have two before us. The Administrative and Finance Committee, chaired by Director Trevino, and then we have another committee, Water Resources and Facilities Manager, chaired by Trevino, but the Administrative Finance was chaired by Contreras. Gentlemen, do you have anything to add to your reports?
I don't. Thank you.
Okay. So no added information. Then we'll go to the next item. Item number six is the consent calendar. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
It's been moved by Contreras, seconded by Director Fellow. Any discussion on that item? Hearing none, we'll take a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Yes.
Director Trevino?
Yes.
Director Fellow?
Yes.
Director Contreras?
Yes.
And Director Chavez? Yes. Passes 5-0. We'll go to item number seven, which is three different items. We'll take one at a time. 7A is to approve the proposed amendment to investment policies. There was a recommendation for the Administrative and Finance Committee for approval. Tom, do we have any report on that?
Yeah, very briefly. So this is a annual occurrence. We do need to review our investment policy at least on an annual basis. And what we typically do is update the policy to be in compliance with any changes in the law, any additional recommendations from GFOA, and in this case, some recommendations from our financial advisor, Chandler Investments. And so there's some minor adjustments that we've made. Chandler has suggested that we make an adjustment to give us a little more latitude in terms of a particular type of investment. The committee reviewed this. The committee approved that and have recommended that the board adopt the updated investment policy.
Move approval from Trevino.
Is there a second?
Second. Sorry.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I do, President Chavez.
Yes, Contreras.
There's only one addition that's been added. I know it was discussed in the policy and I asked the question, but I want either Evelyn or Tom to explain a little bit more of the supranationals that will be added to our potential investment. So if one of them can give us some additional information for not only myself, but mostly for everyone else to understand that one portion that's been added to the agenda.
Okay, we're going to do that. Tom?
Yeah, I will defer that question to Evelyn.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning, directors. So the additional authorized security that Chandler is recommending is actually the supranational securities. Those are high quality investments that are unconditionally guaranteed by the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, International Finance Corporation, or International American Development Bank. This is what they're suggesting we add to our list of authorized securities. And what it is this organizations are actually member organizations of the World Bank and have been in existence for many years. And the investments in supranational securities has actually been authorized in the government code since 2015. And it has been part of authorized investments by Metropolitan. They have it. Other water agencies, they do have it. And this amendment, it doesn't mean that we are going to be investing immediately on these securities. It just gives us an option. Should there be an opportunity in the future, Chandler suggests that we have that in our list of authorized investments so that we can avail of that opportunity when that arises. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll invest in these securities right away. So.
And Tom, this is O'Neill.
Well, thank you.
If I could chip in, I just want to assure Director Contreras that these are high-quality investments. Many years ago, I was working on a bond desk in Wall Street, and I was involved in the trading of some of these bonds, specifically the IADBs. And they are high-quality debt instruments that, as you can see, the legislature has approved our involvement with. So. If you can think of something like the World Bank, I know it's a little confusing as to what they actually do, but they are a lender that's fully supported, that gets involved in trying to help other generally less developed countries do such things as infrastructure projects. And again, they're kind of along that structure, but they have full support and they are highly rated investments. I don't know, that's just my two cents on there.
Great, thank you. Anything else, Director Contreras?
No, and I'm in full support of the new addition to our investment policy. I just wanted to let everyone know what it was about. I'm in fully support of it, thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, let's take a vote. There was a motion by Trevino, seconded by Fellow. Take a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Yes.
Director Trevino?
Yes.
Director Fellow?
Yes.
Director Contreras?
Yes.
And Director Chavez, aye as well. That item passes 5-0. We'll go to item 7B, which is to award the architectural design and development services for district headquarters building renovations. This has went through our water resources committee, and so Tom, do we have a brief summary on that?
Yeah, so I'll provide a brief summary, and then if the board has questions, I'll likely defer to Robert. Robert prepared a request for proposal that was issued a few months ago. The proposers were given several weeks to prepare proposals. There were site visits by each one of the three proposers, which are identified in the staff report. All three firms were determined by staff to be excellent candidates to provide these services to the district, given their experience, their location. There was, we would say, a significant price difference between all of them. But since all three were fully qualified, we did select the one that had the lowest fee. They also had a favorable schedule. In the committee, we did report to the committee that we want to try and expedite this schedule because our lease in the current facility ends at the end of July of next year. And so in order to save a couple of weeks, I, under my authority, have authorized the consultant to begin work and pending the board's consideration today of the full contract amount. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions, and staff's recommendation and the committee's is to award the architectural services to WLC Architects out of Rancho Cucamonga.
Excellent. Do we have any discussion on that?
Chairman Contreras, this is Director Trevino. As chair of the Facility Management Water Resources Committee, I just want to say that this item was subjected to considerable vetting and discussion on the committee. And thanks to Robert Talk's excellent presentation, we feel that this is the way to go on this particular item. So given that, I would make a motion to support this.
Okay, thank you.
Second.
Got a second of my fellows. Any further discussion?
Yeah, President Chavez. As you saw that, you know, my record on supporting and getting requests for proposals, as it was mentioned, Robert did an excellent job. The highest bidder to the lowest bidder, the $158,000. So we're not talking chump change. Robert did a great job. We put out about 7 requests. We got the 3 responses back, and there will be a savings by doing what we're supposed to be doing to bidding to WLC Architects, a savings of $158,000. So that's a lot. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, staff, for doing a great job. That's all.
Excellent. Any other discussion? If not, we're going to go to a vote, a roll call vote. Director Santana?
Yes.
Director Trevino?
Yes.
Director Fellow?
Yes.
Director Contreras?
Yes.
Director Chavez, aye, as well. So that passes 5-0. And then we'll go to item number 7C, which is a joint waters resource presentation. Are we doing that today, Tom, or not?
Yes, we are. Thank you. And before we do, I do want to point out, we do have an attendee who has called in after the beginning of the meeting. And it is with the 626 area code. Last 3 digits are 445. If you would like to identify yourself, please unmute yourself and identify yourself. Thank you. Okay, I'm not getting a response on that. So if we can move on. So I've asked Tony Zampiello to join me. We have a joint presentation. Tony is first going to discuss Watermaster's role, all the activities that Watermaster performs related to management and accounting of the basin. And then I will discuss Upper District's, I call it Upper District's water portfolio, but it's our metropolitan connections, the amount of water we deliver through those various connections, a historical view of our total water deliveries by year over the last several years. Which I think is very interesting. And I added a new chart about the effects of our conservation program, which Patty and Elena have put together, which I think just shows a great success story that I think you'll be impressed with. But with that, with the board's concurrence, I'd like to turn it over to Tony to start that presentation.
Okay, Tony, welcome.
Hi, can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. I just wanted to ask one technical issue. I have a fan. It's already getting hot at my house. I have a fan behind me. Is that bothering anybody?
I'm just surprised you had a fan.
I have a fan. You know, different definition. I actually have a fan club.
Okay, there you go.
This is a cooling fan. So anyway, good morning, everybody. Tom asked me to go over this. I just wanted to at least first thank you guys for involving us in this. It's great. We can come back and do whatever we want. The one thing that I wanted to point out is that, you know, when what's now, it's probably 6 or 7 years ago when we were looking at groundwater regulation in California, the SGMA Act, there were a lot of basins that hadn't been managed. And when we were trying to do our work in Sacramento to educate the decision makers up there, we got asked a lot, you know, where's your plan? How can we find your plan? Well, the main basin, even though there's been a lot of branches off of it from the beginning, and Upper District was a big part of forming this, I would always tell them our plan is our judgment. And so our judgment is a stipulated judgment, which means there were issues identified. There was actually a lawsuit filed mainly to memorialize it in the court. And the stipulation part means that eventually all the parties agreed to work under that judgment. So that's the cornerstone for Watermaster. Next slide, please. Or can I move these? No. Ruben, there we go. Okay. So what I'm going to limit the discussion today to is just about the logistics of what we do and how it impacts Upper District's planning and all that. And so you have to keep in mind when we go through these things that there was a conscious effort made when the judgment was entered into. There were a couple of ways the basin could have been managed. They could have, because they knew that it was overdrafted, they certainly could have made the decision to all connect to the Weymouth plant, at least in the case of Upper District, and go and everybody have a treated connection. But at the time, you have to go back to where they're really the only issue that was known for water quality in the basin were nitrates. Nitrates were set up at 90, so where now they're set at below 45. And so the conscious decision was made to use the basin basically as the piping network. And to, for those who wanted to additionally or needed for demand to get treated connections, which Tom's going to talk about, they could sign up, work out their deals because we're all within Metropolitan's district. But because we were so close to the raw water source, because the basin moved water so easily, there was a decision made at that time to say, we don't want to do maybe like a more like an Orange County or a Chino Basin or others and put this plumbing in. The other thing that I wanted to make clear is that if you we have these joint meetings with Central Basin, West Basin and other folks, that concepts within our judgment are similar or the same as others. But every judgment's different. So if you became an expert on this judgment, you couldn't go to Raymond Basin. You couldn't go down to Central Basin and say, hey, I know exactly how all the gears mesh. Mainly because, you know, again, you've got the mix of agencies. You've got proximity to replenishment sources and other things that impact. So moving on from that, the things that I want to talk to you today about are the types of right within the basin, within the judgment. I want to talk about the well reporting or production reporting, the operating safe yield process, because we got a lot of questions about that, how we assess and how we collect, and then replacement and the cyclic orders, which you folks see a lot of. So I'm going to go through each slide, and I think the easiest way, because I'm looking just at the slides right now, is that I will stop after each one and ask if there are any questions. Certainly, if there are questions at the end or any other time, I'd be happy to take it. But anyway, so starting out with the types of water rights. The basin under Section 15 of the judgment defines the various types of water rights originally contemplated in 1973. Now, one of the things really quick that's not talked about here, because it's not technically a right, is each producer has the ability to carry over a year's worth of their allocation. So if your well breaks or you have a water quality issue and you don't want to lease that water, you want to keep it, you can carry over up to that same amount the next year. But as far as just basic rights, there are three rights that we have under the judgment. One is that you'll hear a lot about is the prescriptive pumping right. The prescriptive pumping right is the part, the right that was assigned to producers in the basin when the judgment was first entered into based on historical use and other things. And that's basically your baseline right. That's converted into a percentage. And that number has never grown over the years, but it has been transferred amongst producers. It's about 193,000 acre feet. And then everybody has a percentage of that based on where they were at the time, if they haven't touched their rights, or where they, what rights they permanently required. Now, all of these rights, except for all of these prescriptive rights are your percentage or your amount that you're assigned under the operating safe yield. You can lease back and forth to other producers. You can lease it in to avoid overproduction. In other words, to avoid having to make an order with upper district, or you can lease it out if you don't pump it and you look at your economics and decide to do that. The other thing that's not necessarily unique to the main basin, but that is a part of our judgment is it's not only the groundwater pumping, groundwater rights that fall into our jurisdiction, but the second right, diversion right, falls into our jurisdiction too. So it's a completely adjudicated basin. In contrast to Raymond Basin only takes care of the groundwater rights. There are about five producers in that basin that do their diversions under separate licenses. We take those numbers into account, but we don't have jurisdiction over those rights. So in Main Basin, we do both. So for example, if you look in our annual report, there's a list of diverters. And then there's the list of the third folks, the integrated producers on the bottom. And those are folks that have a component of their rights that is a diversion right. And then they also have the other right. Now the what I would call the advantage to the diversion component is that it does not change with the operating safe yield. Though what happened years ago is there was a number that was determined, again, back to this stipulation and agreed upon by the producers and the diverters to say, for example, and I only use City of Monrovia because I used to work there. And as a young pup, I used to ask these questions about our recording because I was in charge of reporting. There's a component of their right that doesn't change no matter where we set the safe yield. It's either 800 or 1,000 acre feet a year. And that was based on a diversion that they were doing at the time the judgment was entered into out of the Monrovia Canyon. They had a little treatment plant there. We diverted it and took it into our system, and we could take up to that 800 or that 1,000 as part of our adjudicated right. Now, it didn't set us aside from any kind of not all of the assessments. It didn't do anything other than guarantee you that part that whether it was dry or wet that year, it would change. We still have integrated producers. Monrovia no longer diverts out of the canyon because the treatment got so sophisticated. You know, we used to have a little miniature version of the treatment plant at the Disneyland ride, submarine ride. It was like an exact replica of that. And now it's so a giant, then it was like a giant pool filter. But so those are the three rights. That's what we track under our, the judgment. And then that's what we base our assessments on each year or our need for, to buy imported water. Does anybody have a question?
Not so far.
Okay. So can we go to the next slide? Okay, so Section 44 of the judgment states that all pumping and diversions must be reported to Water Master quarterly. So what that means is that if President Chavez or one of the board members called me and said, I'm looking in the annual report and I'd like to know what XYZ district pumped last month, I would have to say, I can't tell you, because we get it on a quarterly basis. The other thing that we do is we double check the math, but we're also in charge under the rules and regs of making sure that it's properly metered so that we can know what's going on. So every meter in the basin is allowed plus or minus 5% on accuracy at the well, but your overall aggregate production has to be within that plus or minus 5% as well. So what that means is that overall, if you had 20 wells, you've still overall got to be within that amount. We do have, as part of our admin budget and part of what pays for out of our admin assessment, we have a company that we hire that does all the annual reporting. They report the tests back to us. That's when we make sure it's the same meter in place. They haven't changed anything. We've had situations where maybe between tests, a producer will change a meter. Usually it's picked up in the reading, but if it's not, it's done at that. Now, this is another area where we differ from different judgments. The local judgments that we have here all require meters and all require the testing, but they don't necessarily handle the program in-house. Next slide, please. So the operating safe yield process, we've had a lot of questions about this in recent years. I'm sorry, did anybody have any questions about the metering, meter testing?
No.
Okay. So we've had questions in recent years, particularly in the area of the five-year estimate made in the operating safe yield report. And that was, I have to tell you that that's something we never went back and changed the requirements of the report or changed in the rules and regs what would be in it. But that five-year estimate, at least in my opinion, causes more confusion recently than it did for the purpose it was actually put in the report. If you look back again, years ago, we had situations where we could have huge fluctuations in the operating safe yield. So what we do every May is there's a report put together that takes all of these different components, rain, deliveries, all of that, what the key well is at, what the key well elevation is at, and that is done purposely independent by Steve, the engineer. Steve's staff and him do that report. Now, the board is not obliged to have to follow that report. In fact, years ago, they hardly ever followed it. And it's not because it hasn't changed recently, because Steve is so much sharper than his predecessor, Tom Stetson. It's more because we have so many few limited parameters now that we look at. Again, going back to when the old reports were put in, when I was a young man, we used to go down to the upper district. We actually met at the upper district office in El Monte. We didn't have the restrictions on the State Water Project. We didn't have the restrictions on the Colorado. We didn't have these long-term droughts that were coming into place. And frankly, in those days, we had pretty much a standard pattern with very little deviation as far as what our hydrology is here in this valley. We used to have, if you looked at 7 years, you would have two very dry years, two or three average years, and two super wet years. And so the board made decisions, which was firmly within their purview, to lessen mainly the economic impacts on the producers, But also, if you look back at where the key well was, I talked about the key well being a major part of this decision. The water levels in the basin were typically higher. And so I have the hearing in May. Over the years, we've had producers give their input as to where they think it should be. Oh, go ahead. Did somebody have a question? Okay. So the producers, we've had producers submit letters. We've had them give their input. The board takes all of that into consideration. And then the key part of it is once that hearing is done, the board shall follow a physical, economic, and other relevant parameters. For example, one of the things that used to be a huge consideration was, as we were coming into this new era, was the availability of replacement water. If in fact we collected, which was a lot of money and it still is to the producers, and we couldn't buy the water anyway because it wasn't available, that was a decision the board could make to adjust the safe yield. Now, this isn't an on or off thing. This has always been that the report comes in with a recommendation and the board considers it, and then they adjust the sliding scale on that. So when they adjust that sliding scale, remember I went back to talking about what the prescriptive rights were. Every producer gets a percentage. They have a percentage that's right on their production sheet. So as that sliding scale changes, if it goes up, they get a bigger percentage that they can pump without having to order or use replacement water or buy cyclic storage with, and vice versa the other way if it goes lower. Now, where that 5 years used to play a big key was that there would always be a secondary plan to that decision. And the board the following year would almost always without question follow whatever the board did. So in other words, if in the first year of the operating safe yield, there was no water available or more expensive water available or no wet deliveries available, and it could only be delivered out of cyclic because there were decisions made then too. The board would typically say, well, if this and this don't happen next year, then we will do that. But keeping in mind, it was a more predictable world that we lived in then. So when you see the safe yield that's set at 150 now, 130, 130, 130, on out the rest of the years, as I believe this year is, there are other impacts to that. If we were to set it at 130 or go lower than that, I'm not sure that we could get the water to deliver it anyway. Sure, we could drop it out of our, in this case, we have the option to drop it out of our letter agreement and take that water. So essentially it's a money exchange and maybe we'd save an increase in rates. But that's why this flexibility of the board is there. That's why this banter goes on in the hearing and the discussion. Shouldn't call it banter. That's not respectful. But that's why this discussion happens in May, to look at those other factors. And so for someone just reading the report and saying, well, you're not following the 130, you need to go back to the previous year and you need to look at the minutes and see what was discussed, because it is not their requirement. That the report is simply just a part of the tool made for the board to make the decision. And then the only other thing to note on this slide is that as parties to the judgment, this being an official action, copies go out to every party, including your agency. So are there any questions on the operating safe yield?
No, go ahead and continue.
Okay, next slide, please. Excuse me. So here, this is the section in the judgment that gives us the authority to levy the assessments. When we went back in 2012, we added the very last one listed below, water resource development assessment, and clarified that. Now, our attorney at the time said, if you want to buy water and you want to set it aside, you could just increase your admin assessment, the amount to do that. Two concerns I had with that is that when you're doing something legal that involves this many parties, I wanted it to be our team that was putting together the judgment amendments. We wanted it to be crystal clear as to what this money's used for. And frankly, from my position as helping the board run WaterMaster, all of these different categories of collection means they have to be used for what they're collected for. So there can't be, as with some other agencies, you can collect the money and then maybe eventually it's not against the law or anything else, but use it for something else. This kind of gives me comfort because we can intertransfer these monies. It has to be documented. It has to be, and we have to pay back each account with interest that it would have used. Now, obviously the admin assessment, we kind of manage that to a zero sum and have a small contingency each year that really isn't a reserve. It's just carried over to him. And then that tells us what to do with our assessment the next year. So anyway, I think most of you understand, but in our judgment, if XYZ water company has 1,000 acre feet of water to pump and they pump 1,500, we don't go out at 1,000 and lock the pump down. What we do, and this is where your agency plays the main role, is that we require them to replace what they've overpumped. So again, all the accounting for whatever that operating safe yield was determined, all that accounting balances out. At the May meeting, we also adopt our assessments. So very quickly, the admin assessment, that is what pays for the office, the running of the office that we do, that pays the engineering costs that we pay to Stetson for several different programs that we do. Within those programs, we do what's called the Title 22 sampling, which means we handle for the entire basin all of the coordinating of taking the samples, the lab contracts, and managing and helping the producers with the reporting. Not to say we do the reporting for the producers, but there are certain, when a new requirement such as the PFAS stuff comes through, we work through with them. You know, our staff learns all about the requirements and we work through to get the sampling and everything coordinated. All of that goes under the admin assessment. Up to last year, we even paid the standby charges to the responsible agencies and everything out of the admin assessment. That's $17 an acre foot, and that's all on all production. The in-lieu assessment for the last few years has been $10. Now, the in-lieu assessment can mean a couple of things, and it can be confusing for folks. What the in-lieu assessment has been mainly used for over the years is to make up the difference in what's called the Alhambra Exchange. The Alhambra Exchange basically put, and it's a very complicated agreement with Metropolitan, is you have the San Gabriel District, some of the San Gabriel District member agencies in the Alhambra pumping hole area of the basin. When all of the science and everything was done to put the judgment in place, they found that that area was particularly over-impacted by pumping, and it didn't recover as much as the rest of the basin. But the San Gabriel District currently has no access directly to treated water. So there was a deal struck where City of Alhambra actually has a MET connection, which is very unusual, but this was forward-thinking 40, 50 years when the folks put this together. They take treated metropolitan water and then all of the other producers in the basin make up the difference so that they don't have an increased cost. But the benefit to the basin is that they don't draw the Alhambra pumping hole down. That's about 3,000 acre feet a year. That's your USG 5 that water's delivered through. And that's what the in-lieu assessment was typically used for. Going back to this unprecedented drought, when we entered into this, the other program that we developed through our committees and with the producers to use part of this money for, if we could, was to actually pay some of the folks, including the ones in your district, in fact, mainly your district, with treated connections to stop pumping out of the ground. And then with this assessment, we paid their additional costs as well. The net benefit to that was in, you know, from 2009 on, in those real tricky first years, when Met had said, well, we're not going to make any deliveries out of USG3 and you folks couldn't come up with the water. It was a way for us to actually deliver that water and keep folks some of the pressure off the basin. The makeup assessment has to do with the San Gabriel River agreement, the river judgment that Steve's a part of. He's one of the upper area rep. That is what we use if we ever have to buy water to make it up to the lower area. We have a positive balance in that account. That money, that assessment is based on the prescription right, not your total production. In lieu and admin or total production. The other is just a set straight cost to folks when we collect it, which we haven't done for 25 years. And that helps us because it says we have to buy imported water for the lower area if we don't live up to the judgment. Replacement assessment is basically the assessment we put in place when people overproduce to give us the money. And then we place an order with Upper District or Three Valleys or San Gabriel District, depending on who the pumper is, to put that water back in the basin. The water resource development assessment, the one that's in place now is to, and that's the highest assessment. That one is on all production, and that is to make up for the drought. What we've been doing under this contract that this letter that we've entered into with you all and Metropolitan, is we're collecting the money to make that minimum payment of purchased water. That water isn't given to anybody to pump. That water is just put in the ground to support the key well elevation. I went kind of fast there, but does anybody have a question on that slide?
Yeah, Ed, can I ask Tony a question?
Yes, Director Fello, please go.
Do you also deal with the Monterey Park Exchange? And does that work the same way if you do?
Yeah, Director Fello, that's that in lieu assessment I was talking about, the Alhambra Exchange. There are letters that you'll see back and forth between Watermaster and Upper District and the City of Alhambra. We do the calculation. Our staff works with Stetson. We put together those letters, and that's how we manage that account. And so that's each year that gives us a forecast as to what we need to collect the next year to maintain that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Directors, do we have any other discussion for Tony? If not, then Tony, was there any more that you needed to share with us?
Well, there's one more slide, but I don't want to monopolize the time. I can come back. I'm just going to talk very quickly because this is probably the key one that Tom will cover anyway. But this section 46 of the judgment is the one that allows us to collect the invoices. Next slide, please. This just talks about when we do the invoicing. We invoice in September. You'll see transactions. So I talked about how the physical solution works. Replacement water, when we talk about it, is water purchased by Watermaster through one of the three responsible agencies. That's you folks. Depending on where the production took place, who did that, that's how we do all that recapitulation at the end of the year. And then the only thing I'll talk about, again, one of the rights that the folks, the parties to judgment have, is they can establish what's called cyclic storage agreements with us. So depending on their cash flow, they can pre-purchase that water. They still have to pre-purchase it from their standard, whoever their district is, but they can buy it in advance, because what we did to help our cash flow and to help districts like yours better plan is we add $100 to water if it becomes a replacement purchase. We can't keep that money. We have to buy additional water for it, but that's the rate we publish. So if you look at what our replacement rate is and what your rate is, there'll be a $100 difference. The reason for that is to get people to buy it early before they overproduce and put it into their cyclic storage agreements so we can better know, hey, you know, we've got water available, buy it now, because when we make the order in October, unlike past years, we don't know if we can make a delivery. And I think that's it.
Right.
Kind of went fast. There are a lot of other things that we do, and I'm hoping that we can come back and talk to you guys about that.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And Tom, Dr. Pella?
Tony, can I ask you some more questions?
Sure.
First of all, I want to thank you. And I do enjoy working with you on Water Master. I've been through a lot of men who are ahead of Water Master and women. And you're really up on the top there. And you're just a good person, to be honest with you. I wanted to ask you, this judge that we have now, Judge Duffy Lewis, who I like very much, she seems to be more interested in the basin than any judge since I've been on the board. And yeah. And she's asking more questions now about communications plans and PR and that sort of thing. And I'm just wondering, would it be helpful if somebody like Tom Love came and gave a little report about what Upper District does, or would she not be interested?
Yeah, I think we've coordinated. We've started since 2012. We do an annual, we do what we call a conference. It's a conference with the judge. I can't think of the name right now. But basically, it's an update of where we were when we made those changes. She became very interested. Tom has been, I believe, at the last two, if not three. I think there's another one that's going to be status conference. Kelly just reminded me. There's another one on September 11th. Tom has contacted us and asked if he could do that. And the, you know, and I think we can, once we're there that day, we can certainly do the update. We've had Keith there from O'Neill before. He's talked. Even I think Shane was there at one point. And I think Tom's planning on being on that mobile call or whatever it is. She's not going to see us face to face. The only thing that we couldn't do this year, because we had already sent out the notification to all the parties, is amend the slides, because it is a legal issue and because there are folks involved, we have to make sure that they know what our intent is going into the court so they can have people there if they need to. So, you know, I think Kelly's been talking with Tom and Patty about how we would coordinate that. But certainly any party actually has status to go in and talk. It's just the material's already been sent and notified to the parties. And so, that's the only thing we need to consider when we go. I think you can talk about anything under, I think we have a slide about conservation activities. And even, you know, all of you folks as being part of the board, you have status. So
she's been the most interested of any judge I've seen.
She's been really good. She's encouraged a lot of that.
Let me ask you one question. This is just one of those questions. If you had a wish list, is there anything Upper District should be doing better or pursuing? I know you need more water. We probably need more storage. Is there anything else you think we should be looking at?
Well, I think it's all a matter of shoring up that metropolitan supply. You know, we've talked a lot about the Carson Project. There are other things to fit in between the lines there that we can do. One of the things that Tom and I have talked about, you know, this resource development assessment, what the hope is that we're gradually conditioning the cities and the folks, the other producers in the basin, that reliability costs, if you've ever been part of a regular water system, you know, people will say, well, we don't need two reservoirs. Well, you don't need them until you need them. It's kind of like nobody likes the police or fire till you need them, right? And so it's, you know, it's educating the board on and the local leaders on what the value is of that redundancy. And as the sources for political reasons, for environmental reasons become less reliable, there are things we can do, but they're not cheap. So if the Carson project doesn't work or doesn't go through, I fully believe it'll work. You know, we still need to do something to shore up that supply. So one of the things that Tom and I had talked about is trying to continue these types of purchases, getting the water in advance of need, taking advantage of the storage in the basin. That may mean Watermaster putting up some cash. And maybe, you know, and this is just spitballing, if Upper District doesn't end up being committed to a big capital project, maybe it means only because there isn't one developed yet. Maybe it means taking some of the funds and jointly purchasing water and holding it, you know, in the basin. I mean, that's, to me, the basin is our biggest insurance policy. And we're lucky because it's better than, and I'm not bragging, it's got more ability to take huge amounts of water. I don't believe we're going to be as impacted anywhere near with PFAS because we didn't take recycled water. We don't have a lot of big airports. So I think that's what we need to do. And it's, so it's really what I would rely or hope that we could partner with you guys is to advance the education on the in Congress in Sacramento with the local elected folks on really how important investing in the future is.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for being here today.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm glad Tony mentioned that the basin, storing water in the basin, taking advantage of the fact that we have this huge advantage that a lot of agencies at Metropolitan and elsewhere don't have, which is the ability to store water and a lot of water. I'm glad we're taking advantage of that. I'm glad we will continue to take advantage of that, and that we work closely with the producers of Watermaster to bring about that type of relationship that we can have water stored in our basin. It's an insurance policy. It definitely is an insurance policy. I don't know what's going to happen with the tunnel project up in Northern California. I think that the Carson project has a little bit more going for it in terms of being able to get done. But definitely we cannot wait. We have to continue to store water in our basin and take advantage of this great thing that we've been given by nature, which is this huge basin. So thank you, Tony, for saying that.
Any other questions for Tony, directors? If not, Tom, are you going to take over on this?
Yeah, I certainly can. I did want to be cognizant of the time. And so at the director's discretion, you know, my presentation shouldn't take much longer than 10 minutes plus Q&A. So if you'd like, we can put the second part of this presentation off till the next meeting, or I can continue with it today.
I think you could go ahead and continue with it, but I need to excuse myself. Vice President Al Contreras will be taking over. I have another Zoom meeting that I need to attend to at 10 o'clock. So continue the meeting. Thank you, everyone. Excuse myself. And Director Vice President Contreras, you will take over.
I'm here. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, so thank you, Tony. I really appreciate that. And it kind of puts the context around for the whole basin and then how this applies to Upper District. One thing you'll see in this is that about 90% of our annual water deliveries and sales are through Watermaster. And so that's why our coordination and work with Watermaster and all the parties and producers is so important, because that's the bulk of where our water deliveries go. So here's our water portfolio for Upper District. We've got the imported water from Metropolitan Water District. two primary classes of service. There is the full service untreated. And those are the water that is delivered to through USG3 to the spreading grounds. And the water that's delivered into the basin for spreading is only State Water Project. And the reason we don't use Colorado River Aqueduct water is because of the salt. The total dissolved solids are too high, and we don't want to impact the groundwater basin with that salt load. Yeah, then the second is full service treated. Those are the treated connections. I'll show those to you in a minute. And that can be a varying blend of State Water Project and Colorado River supplies. Over the summer, that water has been 100% Colorado River water because the State Water Project allocation was quite low this year. And Metropolitan has water stored in Lake Mead, and so they're able to deliver that through the Colorado River and store and save their State Water Project water for a future year. And the Metropolitan Water District, this actually is a little dated. I forgot to update this number. I'm sorry. Let me back off. I was thinking this was a cyclic storage agreement. So Metropolitan has what they call 10-year purchase orders, where each of their member agencies can sign up for a minimum amount of purchase. And if you do that, then you get a higher Tier 1 allocation. So under those two first classes of service, there's Tier 1 and Tier 2. If you go into Tier 2 and you buy more water than you've got about allowed under the purchase order, then you pay the Tier 2 rate. But Upper District's Tier 1 order under that purchase order is 67,000 acre feet, which is a substantial number. We don't anticipate we will ever go into Tier 2 under the current 10-year purchase order. And then we have the nine MWD connections, which I will show you right now. So this is a list of those nine connections and the agency, local agency or system that serves. So you can see that not all of the producers have treated connections.
That's pretty right.
Some of the producers just rely 100% on groundwater. And then, as Tony mentioned, if they overproduce, they produce more than their percentage of the self-safe field, they will incur a replenishment or replacement obligation. And so a couple of the ones to highlight, you can see USG3, and over on the far right-hand corner, I've shown you the quantity, average quantity of water delivered through those connections. And you can see these are compared to what we deliver to Watermaster through USG3. The rest of these are pretty small. And the next largest on average is that Alhambra Exchange Agreement through USG5 that Tony had mentioned. And then some of our these connections have not been used for years. You'll see the City of Monrovia's connection and a few others. So they, because of the extra cost of that imported treated water, it's less expensive and more economical for these cities to keep their wells in production and produce well water as opposed to turning on the imported water, the treated water connections. But that might change over time. With the RDA assessment, the cost of pumping groundwater is growing. And the City of Monrovia a few years ago had started to look at what they needed to do to reactivate their treated water connection. And this is where those connections are. USG3 up here in the canyon, USG5 in Alhambra, and the other various connections, South Pasadena over here, Monrovia's connection, Arcadia's connection up here is number six. So this is a chart that Patty and Elena have recently provided me, and I found the results on this chart just striking. And so the yellow shaded area is the total population, and the axis is the one on the right. You see we're approaching, 900,000 residents within our service area. The blue bars are the gallons per person per day. This is gross numbers. This isn't just, residential use. This is total water use within our service area. And you can see back here earlier in this century, we were around 200 gallons per capita per day. The drought really started taking hold right here about 2013-14. And you can see with the conservation efforts and the messaging and a huge investment in turf rebate and other conservation incentives, you can see how the gallons per capita today dropped dramatically and is now hovering a little below 150 gallons per capita per day. Our goal we set a few years ago to achieve, over a longer period of time was 150 gallons per capita per day. So we've already exceeded that. And the community has really responded well. The other, we don't have the data on this chart. It was the 91 drought. Maybe you can see a little bit of it off here on the left-hand side. The last most significant drought prior to this last one we had was around 1991. And so call for conservation was made. And demands did drop in 91. But they rapidly went back up. We are not seeing that after this drought, which officially ended in 1617. We are really not seeing an upward trend in demands. So if you take these numbers and put it in context, if you look at this as approximately about 150 gallons per capita per day compared to 200, that's a 25% reduction in per capita water use. And if you multiply that out by a population of 850, that's almost 50,000 acre feet a year. Less demand in upper district service area. So I wanted to spend some time on that because we're going to use this information as we talk about our integrated resources plan, as well as our financial planning, because this also has an impact on demands for imported water. So this is our demands for imported water. These are our imported deliveries, actually sales. This is imported water sales. And the blue bar, and I'll talk about this orange bar in a minute, the blue bar shows you the deliveries through USG3. These are untreated deliveries that go to groundwater replenishment. The green is our full-service treated deliveries. You see some years, and Tony mentioned this INLO program that Water Masters implemented. And for a variety of reasons, it could be, for instance, in 2015, one of the producers had to turn off some wells for a period of time to put in some new treatment system. So sometimes that fluctuates, but it usually goes up for a while and then we'll go back down. The orange bar here or red, whatever color it looks like on your screen, is called replenishment. And that was a different class of service from Metropolitan. They called it interruptible untreated deliveries. And they had these seasonal cyclic storage programs and that water was sold as a discount so they make a determination on an annual basis. Hey, we've got extra water in the State Water Project or Colorado River. We got extra water in our supplies. So if you have a groundwater basin, you can deliver this during the winter months off peak. You can buy this water at a discount. They ended that program in 2013. In fact, it was ending in 2012. I remember that year because I was at IUA and everyone scrambled to get as much of that discounted water in the ground as they could that year before Metropolitan ended the program. So they do not have an uninterruptible supply a class of service that's considered uninterruptible. It is now all firm service deliveries. But Tony will tell you that I think it was around 2013 or 14. When Metropolitan told us that they were going to put us in allocation and not deliver water because it was a replenishment delivery. And my predecessor, Shane, did a great job of making that argument to Metropolitan. No, this is now firm service. That says so in your rate structure. And therefore, you cannot completely cut off the delivery of replenishment deliveries when you go into allocation. So we now have a minimum amount that under the various levels of allocation of Metropolitan, we will still be able to get untreated deliveries for replenishment during those years. The other point on this slide is you can see the fluctuation year to year in our water sales. That creates some financial challenges. And you'll see that as we start to look at our long-range finance plan, and we'll discuss that with the Admin and Finance Committee tomorrow and with the board later on this month, is how can we accommodate and account for these large fluctuations in water sales? The RDA assessment has helped tremendously, but at this point, that the RDA assessment is not adopted by Water Master on a long-term basis. It's short-term for now. As Tony mentioned, maybe that as we get used to that and move towards a firm purchase with the Carson Water, we can create a more stable water sales on an annual basis, and it will certainly help our financial planning. And then our recycle, I forgot to mention this at the beginning, we do also have recycled water. We have the system at the southern part of our service area coming out of the Whittier Narrows and San Jose Creek plant. We've invested over $50 million over the years in those programs, 24 miles of pipeline, pump stations, et cetera. Our partner is the County Sanitation District, but we also have agreements with the City of Industry, Suburban Water, La Puente Valley Water District, and the San Gabriel Valley Water Company, who are delivering recycled water to their customers, and they operate and maintain the recycled water system. So here's the layout. Again, some of this stuff is planned facilities and has not yet been constructed. I think most recently the connection is to the right around here was South El Monte City Hall. We had a dedication event there about a year ago when they were connected to recycled water. And this shows our use over the years. If you ask why were we at 3.2 or 3,200 acre feet and then it dropped, is Rose Hills is in our service area. However, the connection, recycled water connection to Rose Hills came through the Central Basin recycled water system. And in working with San Gabriel Valley Water Company, who is the retail provider to Rose Hills Cemetery and Central Basin, we relinquished that delivery to Central Basin. And so while Rose Hills is still using recycled water, it's actually being delivered through Central Basin system. And so that was taken off of our records at that time. And that's the last slide. And I didn't pause like Tony did for questions in between, but I appreciate your attention and be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Tom?
I have just a few questions related to the graphs. One, what is the F and the B under 2020?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, that's our budget terminology. So when we're preparing the budget, and this slide was from last year, when we're preparing the budget, we show the forecast for the end of that fiscal year and the budget. So the one number is the budgeted number, the other number is the forecast number.
And then there was a graph, it was a yellow graph, it had not that one, okay. That one, this one.
It's jumping around on me too fast. There we go.
Yeah. The 92, 93, 95, 96, is that just data not available?
The zeros? Yeah, we just didn't have the data in the chart.
Okay.
I think the data is available. I'm not sure why we didn't plot it in the chart.
Okay. Thank you.
Great questions, Jennifer. Any others? I learned from your question too, Jennifer. Are there any? If not, we're going to go ahead and move on to item number 8, information items. These items are for information to the board of directors. It requires no action. So moving on to item number 9, attorney's report. Steve, are you there? Are you mute?
Yeah, he's muted.
He's on now.
Muted now?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Contreras. A couple of things that we've been involved in since the last meeting. As Tony noted, there's a status conference coming up in a judgment. There's been some documents prepared in anticipation of that we reviewed. Then in terms of our transactional work, we've been working with Evelyn on updating the employee handbook. Also performed some work concerning district outreach activities and the relationship to the guidelines. Another issue that's come up as really kind of a pandemic-related issue that we're seeing with a lot of agencies is the use of e-signatures for official documents, given that most people can't, aren't convening person-to-person. We responded to a Public Records Act request from an outfit called Smart Procure, looking for some district records. Prepared a short report on the status of the Devil's Gate Dam. we looked at, continue to work with staff on the issues concerning the office building, primarily the Pacific Clinic's lease. Also worked on another filling station agreement with staff, with Alana. And that pretty much concludes my report. I will offer that I heard yesterday from another Sacramento advocate that, it was at yesterday's committee meeting, that it appears that the Central Basin legislation is not going to be pursued for the remainder of the year. And that concludes my post-session report. My attorney report.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Director Contreras, I just have one comment, and I may have we may have missed this. Did the board take a Christy emailed me. Did the board take a vote on the consent calendar?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. I'm sure we did. If not, we can do it again.
Christy, can you hear?
Yes, I'm here, Stephen. It was a question that just came up with a few staff members. We were working on the comments, so we may have missed that.
Okay, well, it's okay if we go back over the tape and there wasn't a vote, we can catch it at the next meeting. Or Director Contreras, if you'd like to just recall the consent calendar and ask for a vote on it again, that would certainly resolve the issue.
We can work either way. Let them review it. If not, if we didn't vote on it, we can bring it back for a future meeting, or we can take a vote right now, minus President Chavez.
President Contreras, I make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
And I'll second that.
Okay,
it's okay. If the board has already voted on it, then we will. This will be a moot motion, but regardless, the consent calendar would be approved. So it looks like it's been moved and seconded now, Vice President Contreras. So if you could ask for a roll call vote, that would be great.
Insurance policy. Director Santana?
Yes.
Director Fellows?
Yes.
Mr. Trevino?
Yes.
Myself says yes. Chavez is gone, so it passed as an insurance policy 4-0. Thank you very much. Moving on to the other Steve. Steve, you got the floor, engineer's report.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice President Contreras and the board. Thank you, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. This crazy year continues. I have a short report. It's already been a long meeting, so I'll give you just a very short report. Key well elevation as of August 7th was measured at 204.5. It just came up about a tenth of a foot from the prior week, and it's about a half a foot from the prior month. Can you hear me okay? Okay, I hear some background. Yeah, about a half a foot from the prior month. So we're still sitting above 200 feet, which is good. That's our minimum operating level under the judgment that we strive for. There's still well over 200,000 acre feet, about 210,000 acre feet in cyclic storage. Part of producer cyclic storage and part of RDA on the long-term purchase that hasn't been transferred yet to the basin, but 200,000 acre feet in storage. No real deliveries right now of imported water to the basin. This is the time of year we really don't deliver a lot of water. Up in the canyon, as you recall, we've been reporting that we had some late rainfall that built some storage in the canyon. Storage in the canyon needs to be released, about 30,000. We're actually releasing water from the canyon through July, and they were going to release water through part of August, but then the fire hit up at Morris Dam. That occurred on July 31st, and because of the fire, they reduced the flow from 500 CFS all the way down to 40 CFS and then ultimately shut it down. But it was going to go until like the 6th of August, but they decided to stop deliveries of water because of what was going on in the canyon. The remainder of that delivery deferred until first week of September. So I wanted to let people and folks know. I know Director Santana has indicated some interest in flow of the water in the river. There's probably no flow now. We don't expect to see. You might see some water there, but it's probably just ponded. First week of September, if you wanted to see flow in the river, let me know if you're interested. I'll verify that they do start deliveries, but sometime the first week of December, they should open up the valves at Morris Dam. That'll be local water that we've stored up there from the rain season. They will release it down the river. It should flow all the way down. It'll either go, part of it will go into Santa Fe. Part of it will bypass Santa Fe and go all the way down the river toward Central Basin. So that'll be first week in September. I think that's all I have. We're doing water conservation now on a fiscal year basis. So since the 1st of July, total water conserved has been local water is about 15,000. I mentioned this other 30 that we're still going to deliver. But this is not the normal time of year. We start building up a lot of water deliveries. That's in the fall and the spring. Rainfall, we've had no rain. We don't expect it. Long-term average is no rain right now for our fiscal year. And I think that's all I have, if I have any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for our engineer?
Yes, I have a few questions, please. First, I have been riding my bike to work. They're changing up our parking situation in City of Hope. So I've been going by the Santa Fe Dam, maybe twice a week lately. So yeah, it's been interesting. I think there was some water coming out of there and then there was nothing. So that's where those questions were coming from, Steve. And then I did notice at Peck Park recently, I want to say maybe a month ago, that the water went up very high in El Monte and it actually flooded one of the bike trails. They had to close down the bike trail. So do you know anything about that?
I don't know about any flooding. They have the ability, as water comes down the river, they do have the ability to divert water over to Peck Pit. That they bypass Santa Fe, they can send it over to Peck Pit. So yeah, they do keep some water there. It's more of a recreational facility than it is a spreading ground. We get some percolation there, but not very much. They usually run it through Peck Pit and then down the other side. If they release it, if they overflow Peck Pit, it actually goes down the Rio Hondo side of the river. So I don't know specifically about that situation, but that's not unusual to send some water over to Peck Pit.
Steve, I did, because Director Santana, after you asked me the question, I didn't get a response from the county for a couple of days, and I forgot to share with you that information. But they were moving water. The distribution committee, which kind of makes decisions on what water should go down to Central Basin under the Santa Ana River judgment or San Gabriel River judgment, So they determined they didn't want to send some water down there, and they were forced moving as much water as they could through the Rio Hondo diversion. And according to the county staff, when they do that, in order to get it to flow south and reach all the way to Central Basin, it does flood that bike path, which is actually the spillway for that Peck Pit. And so when they do want water to get out of there beyond what the small outlet works can do, then it does flood over that, what they call it, their spillway, and floods the bike path.
Yeah,
the water is very low now. It's below. I've seen it in a while. So.
Okay.
Good question, Director Santana, and we can put our galoshes away. For our engineer. Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move on to item number 11, General Manager's Report. Tom.
Yeah, so a couple of things. In terms of the office status, we are continuing on a rotating basis with roughly half the staff in on alternating days, practicing social distancing, wearing masks, and enhanced sanitation. Productivity remains high. Staff are doing a great job. The other thing to report is Steve O'Neill had mentioned discussions about Pacific Clinic. So I'll remind the board that we had three tenants in the building when we acquired the building. Two of those, their lease expired earlier this year. We have, so one of the tenants has moved out. The other tenant, DTW Consulting, is in the process of vacating the building. But Pacific Clinics has a year left on their lease and an option for an additional 3 years. They approached us a couple of months ago. indicated they were interested in an early termination of that lease. We negotiated that early termination and have signed an amendment to that lease, which ends it at the end of September of this year. The advantage for us is we have awarded these architectural services is we will be able to get in initially with a demolition contract into a building that is completely vacant. And so it will be a lot easier for us to complete the renovations. And we'll have that extra space that had the more desirable layout for a boardroom and closed session room and other facilities. So we have executed that amendment. I want to make sure the board, that is reported to the board. And then the other thing I did want to quickly mention was the governor has released the water resilience portfolio. Those of you who were listening in on the Aqua conference certainly heard about that. If I recall, I think we did send a link for that report out to the board members. And there's two very quick observations in my kind of cursory review of that so far is number one, it does identify one tunnel for Delta conveyance as a priority. And then secondly, it emphasizes the importance of groundwater basins. Since we overlie a very large groundwater basin, that's good. But I think the emphasis in the resiliency portfolio wasn't necessarily the importance of groundwater basins who are already well managed. It frankly is the need to do a much better job of managing other groundwater basins in the state. But that's a very short summary. If you take a look at that, and if the board would like, what we can do is do a more detailed summary at a future board meeting. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Tom. Are there any questions for Tom? Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move on to item number 12, the Metropolitan Report, which is already in our agenda and our information. Are there any additional questions to be, or anything to be added, or questions regarding the Metropolitan Report? Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move on to item number 13, the WQA Authority Report. It's also in our agenda. Are there any questions? Hearing none, we're going to go ahead and move to the Water Master Report. Tony or Charles?
Everything is there. It was a very short meeting, and there's nothing else to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Fellows. Moving on to item number 15, AB 1234 Compliance Report. Director Santana. Oh, Tony, did you have anything to add?
Jennifer can go first.
Okay. Jennifer?
For AB 1234?
Yes, please.
I have nothing.
Okay, Dr. Phillips.
I just, Tom just brought up the Aqua. Reported Aqua, and I'm sure some of you attended the Aqua conference. I was very impressed by this virtual conference, and it was nice to sit home and not have to worry about hotels and driving up there. And I just wanted to report that I was very impressed, as I always am, with Brenda Berman. She gave an introductory talk from the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, and as usual, she was very interesting and talked about what the administration is doing and the accomplishments, which are many, like modernizing the Central Valley Project and new biological decisions they've been working on. And she says everybody seems to be in sync as far as protecting species. And they increased $1.5 billion investment in bigger cold water pools and smarter delta operations and investments in hatcheries. And it looks like they've saved 10,000 salmon going up the river instead of 4,000 this year. And she went through all the projects, Klamath, the American River, San Joaquin Project, the proposal that they would like to see Shasta Dam enlarged so it can hold more water. But they said there's a lot they want to do in the next administration as the Bureau reaches its 118th birthday, and that a lot of efforts will go into infrastructure and improving infrastructure. And she said that what California needs is more storage. And like Tony Zampiello brought out too, she said, we've got to get to Congress and tell the Congress that more money must be given for storage. But it was a good report, and I enjoyed the conference. I thought it was very well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Fellows. Director Trevino. I guess no comments from
Director. He had to leave, I think.
Okay, no comments from Director Trevino.
I'm still here, but I'm going to leave in about 5 minutes. I concur that the Aqua Conference was a little unique and different, but I think some of the topics that were covered were really good, and Brenda Berman is always excellent.
Thank you. Be a good MWD chief.
Yeah, you're right.
I have none, so we're going to go ahead and move on to director's comments. Director Santana.
You know what? I guess I could have mentioned this at the previous item, but yeah, I also attended the Aqua Conference. I really, I enjoyed the virtual platform, and I liked what they did with it. I had a chance to kind of get all my, I think they were calling them badges, where you go in and you visit the little vendor booths, virtual booths. I thought that was really kind of fun and rewarding when you see the little buttons pop up with color. And then I have to say that I think my favorite session was the emergency preparedness with Christine Curry. The entire panel was really informative and a lot of great stuff to talk about and to consider when considering emergency preparedness. So that's all my comments.
Thank you. Director Fellows.
I just, we're going to be adjourning in memory of Raul, who died at the Three Valleys Municipal Water District. And I just want to say, he was a very fine person and always very respectful. And I enjoyed my time that when I did get to see him at conferences, and may he rest in peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Fellows. Director.
Just want to echo what Director Fellow said regarding Raul Romero. I had an opportunity to work very closely with him on different issues, especially some labor issues. So he will be missed. He was a true champion for working people. And, I expect that the County Federation of Labor will be doing something to recognize his efforts sometime in September. And so it's well deserved. He was a true warrior for working people. So the other comment I wanted to make is I just saw that the California Supreme Court ruled that referendum process does not apply to municipal districts. Does that have any bearing on us, Stephen?
You know, I'm going to have to track that down for you, Director Trevino. I have not reviewed that yet. But I will, and I'll report back to Tom.
Thank you. Nothing else.
Excellent questions, Director Trevino. I have none to report. So for agenda items, you know the procedure. You can go to Tom, and they'll put them on the agenda. There will be, my understanding is there's no question.
Correct. That's correct.
So we're going to go ahead and adjourn our meeting at, what time is it now? At 10:29. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
And Director Contreras, to clarify, yes, so that we have it on the record, the adjournment is in the memory of Raul Romero, former board member with the San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District.
And yes,
by the way, I served with on that board with Raul the entire time he was on that board. It was a pleasure working with him.
Thank you, and everyone.